Fab Lab Podcast, Episode 9, Advertising Mistakes I've Made and How to Avoid Them.
Welcome to the Fab Lab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. If you own or manage a stone shop and would like to reduce your frustration while increasing your profits, you've come to the right place. As the owner of a prominent Pacific Northwest stone shop with over two decades of experience and the author of the book Less Chaos, More Cash, our host knows more than just a little bit about the challenges of owning and operating a shop. You'll hear down-to-earth, real-life solutions you can implement today to calm your shop operation and generate more profit. Thanks for joining us, and here's our host, Aaron Crowley.
Welcome back to the Fab Lab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. Real quickly, if you haven't visited FabricatorsFriend.com recently and checked out our line of fabrication gear, you should. We have some awesome products, our original stone sleeves, our bulletproof aprons, our fab jackets, all designed and developed and tested in a stone shop by stone fabricators for fellow stone fabricators. So if you haven't bought any of our products yet, I would encourage you to check those out and consider getting them for your crew out in the shop. No joke, they will be safer. They will be more comfortable. They will be drier. And if all those things are true, they're going to be more productive, which actually puts more money in your pocket at the end of the month. And that is what this podcast is about. That's what Fabricator's Friend is all about. The fact that stone fabricating is so difficult. It's so hard to consistently generate profits in a stone fabrication company. And that's why I launched this podcast, which was to share information, experiences, principles, concepts that I have learned and put to use in my own fab shop so that you can put them to use in your fab shop. And so that brings me to today's subject, the third and final podcast on this topic of successful advertising for stone shops. In episode 7, we talked about the foundational principles for successful advertising. Last episode, episode 8, we talked about the 7 essential steps to successful advertising. And in this episode, I thought it would be fun to talk about the many, many mistakes that I've made in advertising so that you might possibly avoid them in your own business and put more of that money into your pocket as opposed to into the pocket of some crafty advertising salesperson. So let's get into it. Advertising mistakes I've made and how to avoid them. Actually, these aren't all mistakes. There's a bonus principle here, something I've actually done right from the very beginning that has worked very, very, very well for our company. And I'm going to share that with you too. So it's kind of the icing on the cake. So the 4 mistakes I'm going to share with you today are making emotional decisions. That's number 1. Number 2 is not enough frequency in the short term and long term. Number 3 is what I like to call the one and done advertising events. And number 4 is over-measuring. So let's get into it. Emotional decisions. Here is why this is so important to understand. We all associate ourselves with certain experiences, certain ideas, certain aspects of our lives. And it's really easy to get caught up in advertising by association, if you will. Things that are near to and dear to us personally, oftentimes we get tripped up and tricked, if you will, into advertising along those same lines. For example, if you're big into high school football, you might be convinced that you want to have your name plastered all over your high school football stadium. If you are really politically active, for example, you might consider advertising with somebody who is very politically active on the radio, in your geography, in your marketplace, in your region. If you are tempted by a good salesperson who gives you a great pitch and you, in an emotional moment, give in to that, even though your budget has already been accounted for, even though your budget has already been spent, it's easy to fall prey to a good sales pitch and to let emotion rather than discipline drive that decision. And so the way to combat emotional decisions is principles. Operating off of principles that you can rely on, you can fall back on, you can revert to. And so in a weak moment, stop the emotion, tell the advertising salesperson, you know what? I need to stop right here and I need to consider your presentation and I will get back to you. Then you need to go back and evaluate that advertising decision, that advertising opportunity through the grid of the foundational principles. Does it line up with my marketplace? Through the 7 steps. Have you followed those How does it affect the budget? And so on and so forth. And then you can make that decision, but don't ever make an emotional decision in the moment on your advertising. The money is too hard to come by and it is too easily wasted on advertising that doesn't fit those principles. So that's the first one, is making emotional decisions. I will never forget, and I might have mentioned this in the last episode, I used to be very politically active. In fact, I even ran for the state legislature here in Oregon in 2010. And it was a failed attempt. And quite frankly, that was a blessing in disguise, losing that campaign. But I was big into politics. Man, I thought politics was it. And there was a guy in the local market who was a lightning rod for political controversy. And I listened to him. I agreed with him. One time I even went and smoked cigars with him. And he was kind of a celebrity in Oregon. And I almost made an advertising decision based purely on those political and emotional affiliations when it turned out the demographic conflict was so extreme, every dollar I would have spent with him would have been flushed down the slurry pit. I mean, it would have been an absolute advertising disaster. So number one, avoid emotional decisions by relying on your principles and being disciplined. Number two, not enough frequency. I can remember another advertising personality that we used. It was 2012. It was probably one of the worst years in our company's history financially, and for whatever reason our sales were really suffering that year, and I was spending money hand over fist. Among the things I did is I added another channel. It was a very large channel, probably the largest station in the Portland market. Its reach was tremendous, and they had a guy on their morning show who was very, very well regarded, very well liked. Problem was that their audience was so large, that's how they priced their advertising. And even though he had a pretty decent number in terms of the concentration of my target market within his audience, his overall audience was so huge, the cost of reaching that narrow segment of the market was really more than I could afford to spend. And so while I should have been, you know, buying 5 to 10 spots a week during the drive time when he was on the air, I could only afford to buy like 5. And then it was like maybe 3 weeks out of the month, not 4. And I was so desperate to make, you know, advertising investments to try and grow our sales that year, I violated this principle. I did not have the money to fully reach the frequency that was necessary. I needed to be running 7 to 10 ads a week during that drive time, 4 weeks a month, to really get our money's worth out of it. So after about 3 months, it was producing nothing because the frequency wasn't there. And so I finally just said, I can't afford to spend any more than I'm already spending. So I concluded, I'm just wasting my money. And I'll bet that campaign, I'm guessing that was easily $3,000 to $4,000 a month was what we were spending on that one little channel for those minimal ads and that gigantic audience that only had a small concentration of my demographics. So I'll bet I spent at least $12,000 in the 3 months I was on the air on that channel, and it was an absolute waste of money. So if you cannot afford to advertise at the minimum frequency necessary to reach your target market, don't do it. Don't rely on hope. You got to have the frequency. So number three, the third principle, what I like to call the one and done advertising events. These are the once a year, the annual events that all advertising channels promote. They all have their gimmicks. They all have their promotion. They all have their events that they go out and sell additional advertising to. The problem with the one and done events, oftentimes it's at a reduced rate. It's a discount rate because they've already, you know, got the publication going. They've already got the radio going. It doesn't cost them anything to run additional ads because they're already going to do the work. So they can sell that advertising at a discount, which seems really appealing in the moment. The problem is it violates the last principle. One ad per year is not sufficient frequency. There are not enough eyeballs that are going to see that ad enough times to get to the point where it's going to register with those viewers when they're ready to buy granite countertops. So virtually any one-and-done event-oriented advertising is going to be a complete and utter waste of time. In our area, we have what's called the Street of Dreams. If you've ever done work in the Street of Dreams, you would know it's called the Street of Screams because it's an absolute nightmare. They build like 10 of these gigantic $2 or $3 million houses. Tens of thousands of people come and tour this Street of Dreams. And they always put out this fantastic Street of Dreams magazine. It's beautiful. It's well done. It's high class, high gloss. The problem is, it happens once a year. The other problem is that about 95% of the people walking through those homes can't possibly afford to buy one of them. And they're seeing everything under the sun, from landscaping outside to flooring in the entryway to carpet and to the furniture packages to the paint to the art on the walls, the cabinetry, the lighting. Everything under the sun is there in addition to your countertops. The idea that they're going to pick up one of those magazines with 400 other ads in it and they're going to see your ad and in a year when they're ready to buy countertops, remember, it's a complete and utter, in fact, I would say it's almost criminal that those people are selling that advertising, because it simply does not work. So avoid the one-and-done advertising events at all costs. Number four, over-measuring. Oh my goodness, this is, what, May 8th today, 2018. I am here to tell you I have done this on a couple occasions, and one of those occasions was rather recently, and I am reminded I am wincing in financial pain, having violated this principle, having made this mistake yet again. But here it is. It's over-measuring. As I mentioned in the last episode, advertising is about 75% art and about 25% science. So no matter how careful you are, no matter how hard you work to measure the effectiveness of your advertising, it's not scientific. You cannot measure in a perfect world, in a laboratory-like setting, how effective your advertising is. And here's the mistake I've made. As we've added channels to our advertising, it becomes harder and harder for customers who've seen us on HDTV, who've seen us on Angie's List, who've heard about us on the radio, whose neighbors had us do their countertops and told them they should call us, and have seen the Advantage coupon book that goes out across their mailbox. It's very hard for those people to discern in the moment when we ask them, would you mind letting us know how you heard about us? You're going to get average data. At best, your data is going to be a rough average of what it's producing. And the problem is if you put too much stock in that finite, focused data in terms of, well, how many people saw us on TV last month? Well, it looks like 7 people said they saw us on TV. Well, how many people were on there the previous month? Well, 9. Oh, no. That means our TV advertising is declining in its effectiveness. If you're measuring it scientifically and concluding that based on the numbers and saying, well, the TV must not be working as well as it used to, let's drop it. I'm here to tell you, over-measuring and concluding things on a scientific basis is not an effective way to measure your advertising. You've got to go back and rely on the principles, the foundational principles and the 7 steps that you followed, and then trust that it's going to work. And understand that even if in the finite data it suggests that maybe it's not as effective as it used to be, you got to stick with it. I did this in 2011 with our advertising. We had hired a local celebrity, Bob Miller. He was called the voice of Portland. He'd been on the radio for 35 years, and we hired him to do our radio advertising. He did live reads, and then he recorded spots for us. Everybody in our demographic knew who Bob Miller was. It was unbelievably effective, but I was measuring it too closely. And over the course of months and months and months, it appeared to me as though those number of Bob Miller leads, as we used to call them, was declining. And it declined to the point where I divided the number of leads into what I was spending on the advertising. And I said to the radio people, I can't afford to continue to pay this kind of money for a lead. So I quit. Guess what happened? Almost immediately, my overall number of leads, you could graph it, began to diminish. It just began to slide. And it slid for about 2 months, and I realized, we got to turn this back on. We got to do something. We turned his ads back on, and I am not kidding you. It literally reversed course, and that graph went the other direction. So even though I wasn't able to measure in the finite by number of leads generated by that channel, it was working. And so we did the same thing this last winter, heading into this spring. we made this virtually the exact same mistake. We've made a massive pivot, a massive transition in adding digital marketing to our mix. And as a result, we were spending a lot of money in that, building that. And we thought, well, the numbers show that some of these other channels aren't performing as effectively as they used to. So we began to cut those off as those agreements expired. Guess what happened? We experienced a unmistakable and terrifying decline in the number of leads that were generated overall. We turned those channels back on, and even though we couldn't measure them specifically, guess what happened? Quote volume literally bounced back like a stock market graph. It shot back up in the other direction. So I'm telling you, if you've done your homework, if you've done your advertising based on the principles, if you followed the steps, you got to just let it work. And you got to not give in to the temptation of concluding that it's not working, even if the finite data suggests it is. So that's the fourth mistake you got to avoid. Once you're spending that money, you got to maintain the momentum. You got to keep it going and trust that the work you did to start the advertising was sufficient. That's why that foundational work is so important. So anyway, that's the fourth mistake, over-measuring, believing that it's scientific when it's really more of an art. Okay, the fifth principle. This isn't a mistake that I've made, but I alluded to it in the last one. This is something I've done very well from the very beginning. So this is, I guess, four mistakes I've made and how to avoid them, and the bonus principle that if you follow this in radio advertising, you're going to crush it, as long as you're following all the other steps as well. So when I began to consider radio advertising, probably back in 2010, there was a company in Portland that was selling outdoor kitchens, and they seemed to be everywhere. Every time I turned on the radio, I heard this outfit's ads. And since they happened to have their showroom in the same city we had our fab shop, I said, you know what? I'm interested in radio advertising. I'm going to go talk to this guy and see if whoever is making those decisions will tell me, you know, what they're doing. I walked in there. I said, hey, I'm a business owner here in Tualatin. I hear you guys' ads all the time. Is it possible for me to talk to the guy that makes your ad decisions? And it was the CEO of the company. He had an advertising background. They said, sure, he's right in here. Literally, no joke. They walked me in. I sat down in his office, and he proceeded to tell me this principle I'm about to tell you. And he said, I've been advertising on the radio for decades. And let me tell you, if you do not have a celebrity endorser, you're wasting your money. Now, a celebrity endorser is somebody that is widely recognized in your target market, who can speak to your company's value. They can speak to your background. They can validate you as an authority. They can validate you as an acceptable choice for the product that you're selling. And he said, if you don't have a celebrity endorser, you're just wasting your time. And so we went through the steps. We found the station with the highest concentration of our target market. And guess what? It was this guy I just mentioned in the previous principle, Bob Miller, the voice of Portland. You would think that hiring a celebrity endorser would be really expensive based on the phrase celebrity. I'm telling you, it is so unbelievably inexpensive for the privilege of having somebody that the audience listens to every day religiously, who has a relationship with them. When that person speaks, their audience listens. As soon as I heard this, I said, that's why a perfume company would, you know, pay Paris Hilton $1 million to put her name or face on it, because all of her fans are going to immediately associate her with that product, and they're vastly more likely to buy. So that's my tip. That's this principle. If you're going to do radio advertising, you got to hire a celebrity endorser. This is no joke. That was in an era when I was still out doing sales calls. I would go to the customer's home, measure their kitchen, do the presentation, and ask for the sale. I cannot tell you, this was too many times to count. I would ask people, so how'd you hear about us? You know, whatever. Well, how many quotes are you going to get? I remember a customer telling me, well, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but you're the only one we're going to get a quote from. And I said, okay, why? And they said, no joke, this is virtually word for word. I remember this from 7 or 8 years ago. They said, well, we listened to Bob Miller, and we've been listening to him for decades. And if he says to go to you, we're going to buy from you. That happened over and over and over again which speaks to the power. So let's just say I'm spending $4,000 a month on a radio channel for a drive time slot that Bob Miller was doing live reads. And when he retired, he continued to record those spots for us so people still recognized him. I think his talent fee is what they called it, was $400 a month. 10% of my advertising to get this famous Portland icon, this radio personality, to endorse my fab shop. It was so inexpensive, and yet it was so unbelievably effective. The great thing is as we added cable TV advertising, he continued to voice and record those spots as well. Again, same demographic. We're making the decisions based on the mix and the concentration of our target customer on those channels, knowing that they're not only going to recognize his voice, they fit within the message that we have got. And so the combination just made it even that much more effective. And so that's the fifth principle. That's the bonus principle here. If you're going to do radio advertising, make sure you ask about their local talent and see what their talent fee is so that you can pay them to endorse your fab shop. So that wraps it up. Those are the four mistakes I've made, and quite frankly, I've made more than four, but those are the big ones. Those are the ones to avoid. You avoid those, you're going to put a lot more money. You're going to save a lot more money. Your advertising is going to be so much more effective and productive. So I hope you will put those lessons to work for you in your fab shop. As you wrap up this podcast and go back to work, working to develop your market, your understanding of who your customer is, to develop advertising that will be successful, that will generate more qualified leads for you to go out and close, so that the ultimate goal is that your company becomes more profitable and you become more successful in this very difficult endeavor that we have gotten ourselves into called running a granite and quartz countertop fabrication company. So thank you so much for joining me today on the Fab Lab podcast. I'm so glad to have been able to spend this time with you. Please check back with us next week for our next episode. Until then, have a great week and happy fabricating.